the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast is just two guys and maybe a guest or two discussing Bitcoin, Bitcoin equities, and the related macroeconomic space. It's not meant to be financial advice, so please, if you're doing any investing after listening to our program, do your own research, do your own due diligence, and understand that any money you invest can be lost. The show is meant for entertainment purposes only, and we hope you enjoy the program. Friends and enemies, welcome to another episode of the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast on the CBP Media Network. Len, how's it going over there in the basement? What's up? We already got commentary in the chat. No recession here. How you doing there, buddy? Is that a basement? Can I call it that? Or do we not define it from here as the Secretary of the Press over in the United States has to defend the recessionary traits of the economy, Joe Biden's economy?
When you call it basement, that means I'm below ground and I'm not quite up to par with everybody else. That's not the way to say it. Just say I am here doing my thing wherever I am. It may be the basement. It may not be the basement. We'll just redefine terms as we go along. No problem, Joey. Everything is great here. How about you?
I'm fantastic, man. My allergies are acting up. My wife told me I sound like I'm getting sick. So you'll have to tell me if you think the same thing. But everything's good, man. I am busy at work. Had a great weekend. I just want to say maybe before we get started here. Actually, let's do the sponsors first. Then we'll do a little housekeeping. How's that sound?
Sounds good.
Sounds good. Okay. This show, as with all shows, sponsored by ShakePay. Best place for Canadians to buy and sell. Where's the hat? Still working on the reverse angle. There's the hat.
I have the shirt, yeah, though.
You got the shirt on. I wore the Bitcoin Age shirt, but it's cold in this basement. Anyway, so the best place for Canadians to buy and never sell their Bitcoin. Len, they got four things going on right now. They got ShakePaid. You can get your entire purchase comped in Satoshis if you spend off your CAD balance. Outstanding. They got the Sats Back card. 2% on your first 5,000. Wicked. 1% on every dollar after that. And I'm sure you got lots of dollars to spend because inflation is going bananas. Third, they got Shaking Sats, which is awesome. You can shake your phone every day if you use our promo code to sign up, Charlie Beta Peter, CBP. And up to day 365, you get some amount between 0 sats and 1,000 sats. Then every day that you shake in a row, after 365 days, is 1,000 sats in your pocket. You cannot beat it. Finally, Len, they got Shake Squads. You and four friends can hop on the same team, name it, put an emoji after it, or don't, whatever you like. If you're an emoji guy, throw one in. If you're not, don't worry about it. And every time someone on your team makes a purchase, you all get 42 sats. Now, we're going to have some kind of contest with that in the near future, Len. I almost don't even want to say what the prizes are going to be because the prizes, I think, are really going to be a hit. And I want to keep them secret as long as I can, maybe till like next week or the week after, whenever we finally get that ironed out. But anyway, if you haven't given ShakePay a shot, you're missing out. It's a great place to buy and sell. It's got a great app. Great team. We love Carlo and everyone over there. We hope you give them a go.
Absolutely. And our second sponsor, well, it works well with ShakePay because what are you going to do with all the Bitcoin that you purchased? Why not put it on the Ledin platform and earn some interest? Open up an account with our referral code below and fund your Ledin account with 150,000 Satoshis or 75 USDC. Keep it on their platform for 15 consecutive days and they'll gift you 10 USDC. And if you need some money in a pinch and you don't want to sell your big stash of Bitcoin, well, Ledin is there to help you out. There's a 50% loan to value. You could just borrow against your Bitcoin. You're good to go. You could expand in your house. You could buy a new car, whatever it is you have to do with that newfound money. Lots of options available to you. And they also have the B2X option. So if you think the price of Bitcoin is going up, although it's not showing any price in my block clock right now, it's Moscow time. But you could use B2X, double up your Bitcoin stack. And if the price goes to a point that you're very happy, you pull out, you're good to go, and you have more Bitcoin than you started simply by timing the market and using Ledin's B2X. And finally, they have the Bitcoin-backed mortgages. Those are in industry first. So check their website to see where they are offering those Bitcoin-backed mortgages because they aren't available in all jurisdictions. But also check their website to see what are the interest for the savings and for the borrowing rates because they change on a month-to-month basis. Check their website out.
Love it. Love it. So a couple things, Len. I don't know if you have any housekeeping, but I just got one item. I went for beers yesterday at Grain and Grit in Hamilton with Hoddle D and another Bitcoiner. We'll call him Prover of Work. I don't want to give his full name since...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so we were there for a couple hours. Had a
is
couple
that
of
the
beers.
Gentleman? I don't want to say, but does he have a place in downtown Burlington?
Yes, sir. Yes,
yeah,
sir. Yes,
really
sir.
Nice
yeah,
guy.
Yeah, yeah. So talked to them for a few hours. Awesome time, man. Always a good time meeting with Bitcoiners. I was pretty hungover because I had a busy weekend, including a lot of stuff going on Saturday. So excellent, excellent time with those guys. And we may as well say now, D is our guest for the Wednesday show. So 7 o'clock, we're going to bring on D. He's CoinKite support. You've seen him at a ton of different meetups talking about CoinKite stuff, talking about Bitcoin. And he's a little younger than we are, Len. So I'm always interested in hearing what the younger generation has to say about the stuff going on in Bitcoin. He's going to be a great guest, I'm sure. I'm looking forward to that one quite a bit.
Not just what's going on in Bitcoin, but also in the world as a whole, Joey, because the younger people, I'm going to say it, man, they're getting a shaft through this whole deal. And we'll get into it in the show. But yeah, it's going to be awesome to have him talk about CoinKite and various other things as well. So if you have any questions to do specifically with CoinKite, send them in. We'll be happy to.
100% drop them in. I guarantee he had this little pouch full of CoinKite goodies at the bar. It was something. It was something. Yeah. I hope that he talks about some of that stuff on Wednesday. I'm looking forward to it. Like I said, the price of Bitcoin land in American dollars, $21,666. Oh, no.
Oh, my God. Oh, no. You beat me to it because I couldn't get the price of Bitcoin in Canadian. Sorry, Joey. I just switched my laptop. So it's all just like, it's a learning curve for me still. But let's see what
business
we got
on air.
Yeah. So $27,851 in Canadian. So, yeah. What's going on, ladies and gentlemen? Let's rally this sucker. I think we're getting ready for what the big news coming for later the week from the Federal Reserve. It's going to be a fun time moving forward. Plus, we have recession talk, but or maybe not. We could redefine those terms. I also want to mention podcasting 2.0. Make sure if you're listening to us on the audio side, check out Fountain.fm. You could use that as a replacement for your regular podcasting app, and you're simply earning Satoshis for listening into podcasts. You also have the ability to tip podcasters if you want. And all the sats that we gained for this week are going to be donated to Bitcoin Smiles, as we mentioned last week. And this is an initiative that is trying to provide free dental care to the people of El Salvador. We didn't get a lot of Satoshis this week in comparison to previous weeks. So we're going to do this again for the next week. So hopefully we'll give up a little bit more to Bitcoin Smiles. So please, if you have an opportunity to spare some of your sats on podcasting 2.0, please do it because we'll be directing it to Bitcoin Smiles. It's for a good cause. Hopefully we'll make some people.
Some of you guys are getting sats on Fountain, like on the house, getting it for free. Donate some of those to our show and we'll put them to good use. Guaranteed. They're going to go to a great cause. We'll talk about it every week. And Len has been really good at finding these causes so far. I'm sure there's many, many more out there that are really, 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 they're really, really, really important causes that are also pro Bitcoin, which is a very important piece of the equation, obviously. So yeah, and if you have a cause that you think that you think we might want to donate to, let us know. Hey, Len, we'll always take in suggestions.
Yeah, we'll have to vet them because we don't want any of our accounts frozen by any measure. So we never know what may happen. But I did do some vetting for this one. Bitcoin Smiles checks all the boxes. I think we're gonna be good to go with that one. No issues there. But that's it for housekeeping on my end. And I'm not sure if you have anything else you want to discuss over there.
Nothing, man. Let's get into it. We got a tight-ish A block, but I think there's going to be quite a bit to talk about. You got two pretty big subjects here. So let's get into the rip.
Yeah. So the first story I have is about Fedi app / Fedi Mint. And this has got some news this past week. So the Fedi app essentially is just a Bitcoin mobile app, and it's used for custodying Bitcoin. And I'm going to get into what it is because I'm not sure if everybody's aware of what it truly is. So the Fedi app is simply just something built to provide a user interface, and it's taking advantage of the Fedimint protocol. And the Fedi app is going to be rolled out sometime in Q1 2023. And some people will be asking, okay, this is just custodian Bitcoin. What are they trying to achieve here? Well, let's look at the current state, what we have right now with Bitcoin. And some people are going to say Bitcoin adoption is hindered because of its view that it's poor user experience and the half-truth of perception that it's difficult to buy and sell Bitcoin and custody and store your Bitcoin safely. But this is where the Fedi app comes in. It's built upon the Fedimint protocol, and it's going to make things easier for normies to get into Bitcoin, store their Bitcoin, and just function with Bitcoin on a day-to-day basis. And this project got a heck of a lot of press this past week when news broke that they raised about $4.2 million. And this is through some VCs, and they're helping with funding it to get this project off the ground.
Okay, so one of those VC firms is Ego Death, Jeff Booth's outfit, and I think 3110, Marty and Matt also involved, right?
Yeah. And okay. I fear for where I'm going with this, because they were also, they had some people from FediMint on TFTC today. So obviously they're very pro this. And the fact that you had some VCs funding it, it looks like to me there's investors here that are going to try to potentially commercialize it. Why would you do it? You would fund it to get some commercial exploitation in the end. So in a nutshell, FediMint is going to provide a new way of custodying Bitcoin and targeting normies and help them onboard into Bitcoin. That's essentially it in a nutshell. And we could briefly talk about the technicals. I won't get too in-depth here. I'm just going to give a very broad overview. So the genesis of all this stems from something called eCash. And if you look at eCash, you could think of that as something like an IOU banknote. So you go to the bank, you deposit funds, and you get an IOU banknote that you could redeem at a later date to get your money back that you originally deposited into the bank. And this IOU note that you got can be also traded with between people. And as for a way to ensure privacy, the identity of the previous owner of the banknote is essentially lost in the sauce. So the IOU is digitally signed before it goes off to the recipient. So there's privacy built in the eCash model. And FediMint takes this and incorporates a couple of more steps to bring it to the next level. The first thing they're doing, they're including multi-sig. So in other words, you can access the funds only if you have met a certain criteria, such as 3 out of 5 private keys that are required to get access to your funds. And the second thing they're including in this is, in my opinion, it's rather contentious. It's called federations. And this is essentially a second party custody. This could be your closest friends. It could be family members, but it's going to be people that have a firm grasp of Bitcoin and potentially their technicals. So in other words, these federations are trusted sources who will be used to handle your Bitcoin. So this is essentially just an introduction of a trusted model. And in my eyes, it gets a little dicey at this point, because the way I see it, well, okay, I understand how it works, but users deposit Bitcoin into the federation and you receive these IOU tokens, and these tokens can be sent to anybody in that federation and will be done so anonymously. And you're using the 3 out of 5 multi-sigs to ensure that the funds are moved and so forth. And since you need 3 out of 5 signatures and the federation is already made up of trusted people, it will be difficult for them to collude and to try to gain access to your Bitcoin, but the potential is there. But you still also have to need to trust them that hold on to your Bitcoin and also be not bad actors as well. So there's a level of trust you have to have. And I have some questions and concerns with that. Also the IOU tokens. I'm still trying to wrap my head around what these are, what network it runs on, who are the issuers, does the supply cap mirror what is Bitcoin? I don't know. There's a lot of questions at this time. I have not been able to find answers, but I might add, it'd be cool if we get somebody from the Fedi team to come on. Like perhaps we could even get the co-founder, Obi Nosoi. I think I pronounced his name correctly. We'd love to get him on the show, Obi, to come on the show. We could talk about this a little bit more in depth. But anyways, I digress. What I'm trying to achieve with this Fedi app is simple onboarding, community custody, increased privacy. This is cool, this next one. Lightning wallet. That'd be cool if they could do it. And they're trying to make some sort of humane design. But what's the cost of all this? Well, you're going to be trusting somebody else with your Bitcoin. And in my view, it's you're adding a point of failure here that doesn't really need to be there in the first place. You're making somebody else custody Bitcoin. And I don't mean to view this all negatively. I'm trying to be objective here. But the inclusion of all these VCs also makes me wonder how they're going to try to commercialize it. They're not going to simply just give money and have projects built and not make money in the end. They're trying to get something. And every time I hear the letters VC, I always think of rug pulls. I don't think it's going to be applicable here, but still, I'm going to be on my guard. I'm just not all that truly impressed with this. I'd love to see more how the case use of this. I would like to see it in the wild. I'd love to see this thing actually in operation. But still, in my eyes, there's another level that has just going to be inputted here. That's another level of trust, another level that could break. And I don't know. I'm not all that bullish on this, Joey. I'm curious to hear your thoughts.
This is, for me, going to be a catalyst for me to figure out some of the more technical aspects of Charmian eCash, which is the basis for this protocol or this sort of product. And among other things, the different custody options. So I'll say that as far as the VC thing, I think if I think about the people involved, Matt, Marty, Jeff, and the two partners that Jeff has, I forget their names, Andy and something else. I think that it's safe to say, Len, that they're probably of two minds when it comes to a return on investment, right? One would be, like you mentioned, commercializing the product, selling it somehow, which I'm all for. If they want to sell the product, if people want to pay for it or pay for some kind of upgraded service level or whatever when they're using that product, fine. Free markets talk, and if that's what they want, then that's what they want. But I think if you're a Bitcoin hodler like Jeff is, Marty and Matt presumably have huge stacks of Bitcoin, you're driving up the value of the network, which is going to drive up the value of the asset. And if you can do these things, then that adds value. That's one thing. You'll have to help me understand why this is not a fleshed out thought, but I'm going to do my best anyway. Why would anyone stop at this level of custody instead of just moving from trusted third party to this kind of trusted second party model to just doing it themselves? Like, isn't that the pipeline naturally? Like instead of trusting someone else, you would eventually just make it to a place where you could do everything yourself and not worry about it. So I worry that the pipeline here, this is not the bottom of the funnel. There's one more level down in the funnel that can't be monetized. And once people leave the funnel down to sort of like self-custody, they're never going to come back up. Do you think I have that right? What do you make of that?
Yeah, it's eventually going to be some sort of progression where you're going to get to the point, at least I think, that you'd want to hold it yourself. But TJam, his comments makes me believe perhaps I'm not of the majority here. I'm in the minority. The way I'm looking at it, we live in this fiat world. We live in this fiat environment where we have to deposit money in a bank. So we've been bred to use these type of services. We're not trained to use the Bitcoin model just yet. But once you grasp it, it's not that difficult to do so. The only issue I see is the keys. That is the breaking point. And that could be problematic, but depending on how you store it and if you remember it or whatever, you're good to go. So that's really the only breaking point in the whole chain, the link that's the weakest link in that chain. Once you get over that, the rest is a piece of cake.
Yeah. There's another paragraph in the article that I put in the chat when you were giving the breakdown of the story. Boomer's talking about it now. He listened to the presentation that Udi made. And in the article, there's mention that there's some political environments where having a friend with the keys is very important because you're not susceptible to government seizure, bank seizure, $5 wrench attacks or worse. And some of these, countries that are on the gold machine gun index. It's still, though, like you mentioned, it's still another, it's a point of failure, right? I don't think you can view this any other way. Now, the question, I guess, for guys like us, Len, and like people who maybe are not making products is like, what's my better idea to route around that risk that's present in environments where I'm fortunate not have to live or do business? That I don't have an answer to. And so I think it's at least a little bit unfair for us to kind of, armchair quarterback this and say how it's got all these shortcomings. I just don't know. Like my big thing is that it seems to me like the best way to ensure your wealth cannot be big, like it cannot be like yanked, is to just go NIM, like really work on OPSEC, right? Buy non-KYC Bitcoin, stuff like that, which is difficult, of course, and comes at a bit of a premium. But this, especially in an environment where Bitcoin really takes off in value, which I think is the assumption that a lot of these products make, these custody products, like you want to be safe because the value is going to go higher and higher and higher. There's no better way to see who your true friends are than to give someone else your Bitcoin keys and watch the price go to 100K for coin, right? like, do you really want to do that in an environment where someone, it may not be your family they're threatening, but it's your friend's family instead? Like, to me, there's still gaps in the model. And maybe Udi can answer some of these questions. Maybe some of the VC guys can answer some of these questions. But for now, I think there are a number of items that have to be resolved before we can really say this thing is going to get off the ground.
I like what Boomer mentioned. He says that he does agree that it's a point of failure, a potential point of failure, but we should have more options available to us. And this is, it does achieve that. It gives us more options. And I, again, because maybe I just can't grasp it in totality, how it's going to be working. I'd love to hear what people are saying on how it would work. And maybe my assessment and Joy's assessment is incorrect. Please poke holes in our arguments, because again, we're just trying to look at this thing objectively. And the only thing I see from this is just, you know, it's another point of failure. Is it putting me in a better position than having everything in my own wallet versus, you know, even family members who don't know about it, but I could teach them the whole process. It's just simply learning the keys. It's not that difficult. It's almost like a password to your bank account. You remember it, but in this case, it's a lot more words. But you just have to put it in perspective. Those keys get you access to the Bitcoin on the blockchain. And without that, you're kind of stuck. So,
yeah. There's some other good comments in the chat. Like Narwhal is talking about how it might appeal to businesses or organizations about multi-sig, but privacy first. That's another good use case. Mm-hmm. The thing is, most organizations, I don't want to say most, but like there's a lot of transparency requirements for organizations as well. Like you can't just have secret assets. And anyway, I don't know. I honestly, Len, like this is, it's very much in its infancy. So that's one thing to kind of keep in mind while we're talking about this. And while you guys are commenting in the chat, that we haven't really seen what this is going to look like in use yet. The model's there and they think it's going to work. And the Federation thing is something that's more or less unfamiliar to me at the moment. So let's see how it goes. I don't want to damn it before it gets off the ground. and you know what, the people, I got to admit, man, the people who are into this thing, Booth and Odell and Marty, like they know more than you and me. So if they're behind it, then presumably not only I think are they good actors, but they think that this thing has a real future. So, you know, maybe should we reserve judgment on this for another 6 months or a year and see where we are? I don't know.
Yeah, a little bit longer. If they're going to be releasing this in Q1 2023, you might have to wait for at least a few weeks, if not a few months, of real life data out there to see what is the implications for this, the case use, and so forth. But yeah, so we're still quite a while away. Still very much in the infancy. It just got a lot of press this week, and it triggered my radar that, wow, this is something we should be talking about. And yeah, here we are. So if that's it, Joey, we could just wrap up the show or just go on to the next topic, your choice.
Yeah, let's get the price in American dollars here and GTFO.
All right, thank you for showing up. No, let's move on. There's still lots to talk about. And one thing that is another hot topic is housing issues and specifically mortgages. And with the economy slowing down, we have businesses struggling to find workers. Wages are flat, inflation is rising, along with interest rates. We might be heading into the perfect storm here for a housing collapse.
Might be. Yeah, we might be. Yeah.
We may be. And the sales of homes are plummeting in the United States. The home supply has risen year over year, and this is the first time it's happened since 2020. Granted, not too long ago, but still, we know what happened in 2020. But again, this is not totally unusual. I looked at charts from the Fed and it shows this happened again in 2018. So not too long ago. But one thing I want to point out is the rate of climb this time around. And if you look at it and you include the brief recovery that took place in late 2021, this shows we're halfway to the point where we were at the housing market crash in 2008 when it comes to home supplies in the market. So we're getting there, but there's a big difference between we're halfway there between now and then. We are going up now at a much quicker pace, aka this is the very beginning or in the middle of a housing collapse. Home sales in the US down 5.4% for the month of June. And this is a month over month figure. This is down for the fifth straight month. People who are responsible for predicting this number, we got 5.4 in a negative, they were predicting 1.1 drop. So they were way, way off. And with the home sales sliding, so do the mortgage applications. And for June, the MBA mortgage applications fell to -6.3%. And the previous month was -1.7%. Again, these are month over month figures. the scale of this lighting is accelerating. It's going faster and faster every month we go down past. And surprisingly, the Fed's latest number shows that mortgage defaults on single-family residential units, they're in a decline. Surprisingly, less people are claiming are doing defaults on mortgages, but the latest figures are only from Q1 2022. We haven't got the information from Q2 2022, but I have a feeling it will be on the rise. But unless they want to redefine what is a mortgage default, and then we could maybe continually see a decline in this result, but we'll see what they do moving forward. But then again, they're also going to redefine the word depression. So maybe they get a 2-for-1 deal when redefining words from Webster's. The total mortgage debt in the US, the number, $10 trillion. Their GDP, the US GDP, is almost $21 trillion. So the mortgage debt right now equates to nearly half the GDP. This is not an insignificant number. And should defaults start to rise, we will probably see what happened in 2008, the same thing that happened then. But this time around, the stakes are higher. The total amount of bailouts that took place in 2008 by the Emergency Economic Stabilization Act, that was around $700 to $800 billion. This time around, how many trillions would constitute a similar style bailout in 2022? This time around, it's going to just be targeted to individuals. Last time it was targeted mostly to corporations. So that will be a difference if should there be a bailout this time around. But again, I stress the bailout would be in the trillions of dollars, not in the billions. And housing issues is not something that is local to simply the United States. We talked about this briefly last week, and we got a little bit more data out of China. Over there, about 950,000 home buyers, they're refusing to pay mortgages. And this totals an estimated US dollar, $100 billion. That's $100 billion US dollars in total. And constructions for new homes in China, they're stalled. And this is due to the Evergrande bankruptcy. And there's reports of building suppliers and contractors also boycotting their loans in protest. So there's a stoppage in new home construction in China. This is going to be devastating to their economy, and by proxy would harm us because we are the ones that are getting cheap goods from them, and we're freaking addicted to the fucking cheap goods. But moving closer to home, we could talk about even Canadian real estate. And I said how much the U.S. global, sorry, the debt versus mortgage debt versus GDP was 50%. In Canada, it's 1-to-1. Our GDP is around $2 trillion. Our mortgage debt in total is around $2 trillion. For every $1 we generate in GDP, we have the same $1 also floating in mortgage debt. That is a large number. That goes to show you how reliant Canada is on the housing market. And this is a bubble that continues to inflate. And we are in so much fucking crap once this thing bursts. And some interesting stats I have here. Provinces have seen up to 1 in 5 owners buy at least a second home in Ontario. 1 in 6 Ontarians own multiple properties. And in cities such as Toronto, the shares of homeowners that have at least 4 homes, that is growing faster than the people buying second homes. There are more people percentage-wise buying homes, 4+ homes in Toronto than buying a second home. People are buying leverage, and it's up to their neck. There's the leverage up to their neck. And this thing starts to unwind. It's going to create a downward spiral that we can't get out of. It's hard for me just to fathom. Can we be shielded in Canada? No, because our economy is not as big as the United States, and we're definitely not as robust as them. So we're heavily reliant on housing market, and the mortgage debt to GDP is a good indication of that. It's a 1-to-1. Also, provinces like BC, their GDP is also tied heavily to the housing sector. We talked about this in previous episodes. And how are they reacting with all this that's going on in the housing market with more inventory and everything going on, rising interest rates? Well, the BC government introduced a 3-day cooling off period for home sales. This is not an indication things are going well. This is an indication shit is going to hit the fan. And if you want to compare Canada to other G7 nations, the price of homes in Canada, they've outpaced them all. And in some cases, we've 3x'd the amount of the price of homes increasing since 2005. So since 2005, we've been 3x higher than some other G7 nations in terms of home prices going up. That's unsustainable. And when things break, it's not going to be pretty. And I also want to point out mortgages in this current form, how we know it, how we use it, it's just a derivative of a fiat environment. and the constant increasing of home prices fueled with cheap credit, creation of new money through fractional reserve. We talked about this many times. And all this lending doesn't lend itself to a healthy economy in the long run. It will eventually, it works for a period of time, but eventually it stops working. And when it does, we're left with a mountain of debt on our hands. And at stake, it looks like the people that, this is going to be a first generation of people that are not going to be having more income or more wealth than a previous generation. I'm talking about the young folks. The young folks here that we have right now, they're screwed. Because every generation prior to them, their prior generation had less wealth. So you eventually pass on more and more wealth to the next generation, except for this one. So we're creating a new generation of people that have less than a prior generation. That is an indication things are fucked up. And in fact, if you want to look at the percentage of young adults right now living with parents and grandparents, it's tripled since 1971. Young people, they have no ability to buy homes. They're, even with rent, it's getting out of hand. So they're just essentially fucked. We've created a system that's going to fucking collapse. I know what I'm going to do, Joey. I'm going to stack sats in the meantime. I hope you're going to do the same thing. But fuck, this housing market, it's not looking good. And once it collapses, we're fucked.
So I'll tell you, there's a lot of things you mentioned that I think are spot on. And you and me have talked a bunch of times as I just make sure that I'm my phone's on silent. Anyway, sorry. There's lots of stuff you mentioned there I think is important. You talked a bit about the American market. The Canadian market, Len, is completely insane. So I got some numbers here I think you'll enjoy. U.S. since – well, let's talk about this graph I have in front of me here from Ben Rabideau, by the way, who's an important guy to follow if you want to talk about Canadian real estate. Outstanding guy to follow. A lot of dense tweets, but a lot of good graphics as well, which makes some of this stuff a little easier to digest. Since 1975, Len, if 1975 your base level is 0%, okay, the U.S. has seen a 100% increase in this.
Uh-oh. We lost Joey, ladies and gentlemen, so I'm going to have to pick up the pieces from here on. So it's 100% increase from?
Disposable income, disposable real income. From my back now?
Yeah, you're back.
Streaming something or something like that. Okay, oh, so 100% increase from 1975 in real disposable income. Okay, so you got that. At the same time, the U.S. has seen about a 100% increase in home prices, real home prices as well. So it's a big jump, but the level of the jump is about the same, right? Important stuff. In Canada, you've seen about a 100% increase in disposable income. Do you know what the same period saw for the price of the average home in real terms? 400% jump.
It's
about,
you know,
150% of that came since 2020. So it's about 250 in 2020, and now it's 400. So
it's a hockey stick. Uh-oh, we lost Joey again.
Yeah, worse, right? Oh, it's like back. This God, there we go. God fucking damn it. Anyway, so to make things worse, Len, you mentioned some stuff there about the housing market and how we're in the middle of what looks like it's going to be a disaster for people in the market. I don't think that's debatable. I think that's, we're there, right? I don't think there's any debate about that at the moment. People are talking about how, you know, house prices are dropping, becoming more affordable. We can talk about that if you want. I'm happy to argue that point. The seasonally adjusted home sales down 5.6% in June. Ontario saw an 8.1% drop month over month. And we're down, are you ready for this number? We are down 53% from the peak as far as home sales. That's insane. There's a couple other stats I got here you're going to love. In Langley, British Columbia, hot market, BC, right? Everyone talks about how hot the BC market is. This is about a week ago, so this number may have changed. Four of the last nine detached homes that sold in Langley, BC, were sold for under their tax-assessed value.
Oh, man.
Under your MPAC number. Can you imagine that? Like, the MPAC is the most conservative valuation of a home.
In Ontario, it is.
Anywhere, it's probably like that.
I can't say about other areas. I know over here.
It's got to be. I agree. There's no way BC is tax evaluating those homes at the price that they're going to go for on the market. There's no way. So four of the last nine sold for under the MPAC price, which is so low. The new BOC rate hike, obviously last week, 100 basis points, now means that the stress test for a variable rate mortgage, you know what the stress test is? You know what percentage it's at?
I'll guess 5.75.
Six. So 6%, which is going to take all these people who think they're going to get into the market as the houses are getting cheaper. You can't pass the stress test. So don't bother. Doesn't matter how much firepower you got, how much saving you did, how responsible you were, you're not going to pass 6% stress test, especially when the cost of energy, which also goes into that stress test, is through the roof. All that stuff makes a difference. And I think the bank knows this and just doesn't care. Ontario, to give you an idea of like where the housing thing comes into broader markets, and I think into Bitcoin as well, as far as like trying to preserve wealth. Ontario right now, consumers in Ontario are nearly as pessimistic as they were in the early days of COVID. That's sort of March, April, May, 2020. Consumer confidence index down around 40 right now for Ontario. Now you might say to yourself, Ontario is only one province. It's expensive to live here. It's not that big a deal. The other parts of the country might be doing better. Do you know what percentage of retail sales Ontario accounts for in Canada?
40%.
40%. So as goes Ontario, as goes the rest of the country. Okay. I'm curious to hear like what our sort of powers that be, like Macklem, like what is the positive spin he can offer here? What is the best case scenario as far as making this into a positive story, trying to find a silver lining he can come up with, that maybe housing prices are coming down, that maybe energy has come down a little bit in the last little while, that maybe inflation has top ticked at 8.1 or whatever it was last time we talked about it, 8.1 or 8.6. Can't remember if that was the States or us, but like the thing I would caution people about is the celebration and victory lap that you're going to see politicians, bankers, all these sort of talking heads take as soon as the inflation is down month over month for the first time is really going to be, it's not going to be deserved. Because whether the inflation number is 8.6 or 7.5 or 6.5 or 5.5, it's still, the prices are still going up. And I think you're also getting, you also might get lucky in the next little while because energy seems to have taken a bit of a backseat as far as prices going up. So if energy continues to kind of level out, they might get a bit of a break in the month over month numbers. But Len, if energy continues to rise in price after this little dip, those inflation numbers are never coming down. They're never coming down. You see now Russia's talking about starting its own currency with the other BRICS countries backed by commodities. They're talking about shutting off natural gas to Europe, among other things. This is not going to end well. And I think that there's no doubt we're going to turbulent times here. I would just also add that you're going to get, you know, people who say, well, Bitcoin hasn't really done its job as a store of value, blah, blah, blah. We said this before on the show. Like, there's no one who's got a better idea at the moment. There's no one who's got a better idea. No retail investor is looking at bonds, stocks, real estate of any kind, really. You used to be able to at least say commercial real estate would be successful, but now with work from home and discretionary retail spending taking a tooth kicking, these things are not safe either. I would say that, as always, the thing that makes Bitcoin attractive is that it's asymmetric. It's a really high upside with what I think is not that low a downside. Never been a better time to buy. You're going to get another look as tech earnings come in. You know, Walmart, or I shouldn't say tech earnings, retail earnings come in. Walmart today, great example. As this stuff starts to leak in, the NASDAQ and the S&P are going to take a walloping. And you're going to see Bitcoin under 20K would be my guess before the end of the month. And if there's a number you want to buy at, you know, under 20K has got to be in the neighborhood of where you're thinking about adding to your stack. I know that's what I'm going to be doing for sure.
Yeah, I'm with you. I've been saying that we haven't reached a bottom yet in terms of the price of Bitcoin, because there is a correlation between that and the economy, the markets. And the markets, we haven't reached the bottom there as well. So if the markets are going to tank for the next little while, especially if the Federal Reserve is continually going to raise rates, and we get reports that Walmart failed to meet expectations and there's going to be a slowdown, and man, we're in some really troubling times moving ahead. Anybody that bought a home in the past few months near the peak and got a variable mortgage at that, hopefully you can weather these very, very troubling times, because if you can't, you're going to have to sell at a massive loss. There's no other way around it. If you locked in at a decent rate at, say, 5 years and or whatever term, and it's a decent rate, maybe you could be able to stomach it, because you'll be able to put a little bit more towards the principal, and you'll be paying as much towards the interest. Won't be paying as much interest, so it's going to be a real challenge moving forward. I don't know what to say, man. Anecdotally, I would like to add that over here in my area, I've been looking at the price of homes. I just checked today, and it's incredible. People are still trying to sell homes at prices, I think, that are close to the top. I think they're delusional. I don't know. Maybe they're getting.
No, you're right. And they're staying on the market longer too. That's the other thing. But Len, the problem is that these people, like, I think that, and this is a conversation I've had with my wife many times in the last couple of months, because we've been looking and thinking about moving. Mm-hmm. I think there's people out there who are afraid that things are going to get worse for the value of their home in the next 5 or 10 years. And who am I to say that they're wrong? You know, even if the Bank of Canada decides they want to stop hiking or they want to cut or whatever, like next year, it doesn't necessarily mean that the housing market's going to recover inside of 5 years or inside of 3 years. And if you're a pensioner on fixed income, part of your retirement plan is selling the house that you raised your kids in, for example, that you no longer need, downsizing, all that stuff, right? And if you can't do that, you know, or you think you have to do it soon, yeah, you're going to sell at a loss, or yeah, you're going to leave your stuff on the market longer and try and get this stuff done, right? But I think, man, like all the other policy decisions that we've talked about on this show over the last year and a half, it's always the middle class guy who gets fucked, you know? It's never the guy at the top of the food chain. The guy at the bottom of the food chain doesn't know any better anyway. He's already
exactly. They already got screwed over. Like
there's nowhere to go but up for them, right? And so yeah. You know, if you're at the bottom, you're sorry, like you're stuck there. The mobility is basically gone. If you're at the top, you're not feeling it as much, right? But these guys in the middle are really feeling inflation. The people who are not going to travel as much. And I would also just mention that, like, I'm not a big retail investing guy. Like, I don't do looks into the balance sheets of these companies or like their customer or their revenue outlooks and stuff like that. But the Walmart one should scare you more than most, because presumably what you would see in a period like this is high-end retailers losing customers to retailers like Walmart as people try and get the same products, a little less quality, maybe a little more, like a little more thrifty, right? People are trying to save a little bit of money. For Walmart to be losing customers or losing revenue, where are those dollars going, Len? Like, they're going to energy, you know, like fuel for your car, heating your home, stuff like that. Like, the more that your necessities creep up as a percentage of your disposable income, the more that other stuff gets totally turfed. And Walmart is going to be a big one. I'm not looking forward to seeing Apple's or Amazon's, Google's, all these guys. Like, I think they're really going to get the shit kicked out of them this week. And I think they're not going to be alone. That's why I feel so strongly about the Bitcoin price. It probably has another leg down, because it's still correlated with the S&P. Whether you like that or not, there's really no doubt that if the S&P drops by 5% over the next month, Bitcoin's not going to drop by 10 or 15. It's just the way it goes at the moment. So I think if you're looking to buy or getting ready to buy, like, now is the time to start thinking about how much cash you got on the sideline and starting to think about deploying it, whether it's equities or Bitcoin, by the way. I think there's some equities would be a good move too.
Do it before it gets inflated away. It's going to be worth far less in the future. Is we'll be talking about why that's the case, because we'll be transitioning right now to the Canadian news. And the first story I want to talk about is Canada's CPI print for the month of June came in. 8.1% is a number that is being thrown around. That is a massive number, and it's the highest in 39 years. A lot of sectors have been impacted. You touched upon travel and tourism. I've been reading stories about some hotels in Prince Edward Island, for instance. They're just getting a fraction of the amount of people they had in pre-COVID. And it's just very troubling times. So 9.1%, that's year over year. And if you believe that to be true, great. If not, then you know that the number is much, much higher than that. So sitting on cash is probably not the best course of action. But I don't know what to do. If you, like, you know, putting it into stock market, you're going to get wrecked. Putting it into Bitcoin, it went down a little bit. Putting it into the housing market, we just talked about that as being a problem. Man, oh man, what a time to be alive. But it's just very, very challenging just to make ends meet.
So when I was cutting in and out there in the Matrix, one of the things I was kind of half saying is that there's a number of people now that I'm hearing more and more. Eric Townsend had who do you have on this week on Macro Voices? I forget, but he's not the only one. He's just the only one I've heard in the last couple of days that's talking now about how this inflation stuff is going to start to show itself to be more linked to the cost of fuel that goes into all this, all these products, right? Whether it's part of the manufacturing process, transport, whatever, you name it. Petroleum is in everything. That's how we built our civilization. So these guys, I think these inflationistas that want to talk about how we're hitting peak inflation, like I mentioned, well, we might get a downtick next month because energy is low. I think, Len, if you notice a significant downtick And the best part about having incompetent leadership at all these places is that they will for sure do a victory lap and talk about how they got the energy prices down and that's what helped. Because that's going to tell you right away that energy prices going up are going to be a problem. And they continue to make mistakes on that front. You know, shuttering nuclear plants, refusing to use LNG, all this stuff. And so if they keep going up the, you know, if they keep going up in price, what does it matter if certain other elements like used cars or whatever come down a little bit more, or other stuff that's linked to supply comes down a little bit more? If the fuel continues to rise, if it gets to $130 a barrel US, or Russia decides to cut stuff off more and more, the inflation is not going to come down. And they're gonna have given up the goods with these celebrations, right? Like, you see Biden tweeting today about how gas now, like you're yep. paying $60 less if you have two cars. And like, bro, gas is still three times what it was 6 months ago. Like, what the fuck are you talking about? What is wrong with these guys?
Len? Not only that, Joey, think of the amount of ethanol that they're putting in there. It's now much higher than they put previously. And ethanol is highly subsidized by the government of the United States. So it's a shell game. The price may have gone down a little bit right now, but it's being paid for by taxpayers' dollars.
Yeah.
So it's a total shell game. You could bring up these stats. He could bring up these stats all he wants. But if you go dig down deep into it, you realize it's a fucking sham.
Just man, tell me again how this guy, like Len, the tweets, man, with the infographics, like last year, the barbecue one about how the barbecue was like 26 cents cheaper under Biden than it was under Trump. Now you got Karine Jean-Pierre, who might be the most incompetent press secretary I've ever fucking seen, talking about how she's not going to define recession from the podium. All she ever says is she's going to get back to you, circle back. We don't know. We're not pros. We're not this. We're not that. And then you get this guy tweeting out today, these graphics of the gas savings for cars. It's insane, man. The other thing I said to someone today, like on this topic was, you know, who is that tweet for? No one who didn't vote Democrat last time is looking at that tweet and going, yeah, I think that's going to definitely turn me. I'm switching jerseys now after seeing this tweet. But the guys who did vote Democrat, like what they're also not caring about that tweet. Are they? Like that's not, doesn't mean anything to them. So I just wonder, like, who is this stuff for? The replies under these tweets are, by the way, are like, it's murder after murder after murder on every single tweet. Like people talking about, to your point about ethanol, people are like, pretty soon they're going to be like, you know, mixing in potatoes and mulch in the fuel and telling me that it's cheaper now and we're saving money on that.
Potato mash.
it honestly blows me away, man. But like, again, one thing we've been saying on this show, how many times the last 3 months, it's disappointing, but it's not surprising.
Well, we've been on a topic of gas, due to prices of gas. So let's transition to something else that's very similar. So in Canada, the oil and gas emissions, they must be reduced 42% from 2019 levels by the end of this decade. And two options that are being floated around by the government are a sector-specific cap and trade system or a modified carbon pricing system that could see the oil and gas industry pay a higher carbon price. So the government really hasn't decided which one they're going to be doing. But what they do intend to, or at least try to achieve, they want to get to net zero emissions by 2050. So first, they're going to try to get by 2030, 42% reduced from 2019 levels. And then by 2050, they're going to try to get to net zero. So incredible goals that they're trying to achieve here. This is not going to come at a cheap price. The fact that Canada is very rich in natural resources, and specifically oil and natural gas, I don't know if this is something we should be doing. I mean, I think this is probably the wrong thing to do. We should be embracing it, not shutting it away. Maybe try to push it onto the rest of the world and try to take advantage of it rather than trying to put more pressures on our own industry from producing it and refining it, manufacturing, whatever the fuck you have to do with it. It seems like it's the wrong course of action to do. We should be embracing this stuff, not pushing it away. So price of gas, price of diesel, price of all this shit that's tied to energy, it's going to go up as long as these policies remain in place and they see them through.
Did you read about this nitrogen, 30% less nitrogen thing too? Is that in the stories here?
Yeah.
Can we just cut that in with this story? Because I think
Why not?
Because it's like this, it's in the same vein, right?
Sure.
We are becoming self-destructive in a way that is almost unbelievable. These sorts of moves are indistinguishable from moves that would be made if someone was trying to sabotage the Canadian economy and food supply. They are indistinguishable. And we've seen the damage this does overseas in the Netherlands. Now, I'll recommend that everyone listen to an episode of the All In podcast, maybe 2 weeks old, where Friedberg, the guy who I think is the most level-headed of that lot and seems to be the least interested in rug pulling the average investor, talks about the importance of nitrogen in fertilizers and why governments are trying to ban this stuff or at least turn it way down. The big problem is that apparently a lot of farms either don't have the technology or don't care to employ this technique where the nitrogen fertilizer is applied over a broad scope of time. Instead, what they do is they plant and dump. And when you plant and dump, the fertilizer's in the ground for longer and saturates and then causes problems that are related to greenhouse gases, global warming, emissions, whatever your terminology is, you pick. In some places, they've managed to tell these guys, listen, we gotta convince people to do this over a broad period of time or a longer period of time so it doesn't damage the environment, all this stuff. And I think that he's right. There's ways, if we want to prevent damage to the environment that's happening because of nitrogen fertilizers, the way to do it is not to pick like some oddly round number, like 30%, 40% emissions reduction, 50%. Like, where's the study that says we got to do 40%? It's not 38%. It's not 39%. Like, doesn't anyone else see that this is like a common thing? It's like a incredibly frustrating environment to do a show like this in, because I think that we try and see things, I think we try and be on both sides. We try and give people the benefit of the doubt. We've talked before about how we've had guests on we don't necessarily agree with, and we give them the benefit of the doubt if we think that what they're doing is honest or whatever. How can this be construed as a good idea? Where is the research that shows this is a good idea? Because I see a lot of real world examples. Sri Lanka, of course, who tried to go this route, years ago, had the article deleted on the UN website about how they were going that route 5 years ago or whatever it was, 3 or 5 years ago. And now what are they doing? I just read today that I think there's like 38 houses of politicians in Sri Lanka that are burned to the ground by angry mobs. Like that, I don't want that to happen here. We got to be better than this. To your point about the original story, this thing about how Canada's rich in natural resources, big time, man. And I think one of the reasons that our dollars held up so well is because of that natural resource richness, that commodity richness. But are we really going to throw that away? It seems like we might, doesn't it? I wouldn't bet on anyone reversing course on this, because if people are worried about where their next meal is going to come from, who's got time for political activism? Who's got time for writing their MP? Who's got time for any of that stuff? It's a self-fulfilling prophecy, and you get into this negative flywheel where people are worried about eating and not worried about how in 5 years it's going to be harder. We've talked about that before. Like when you get into these situations where people are worried about the short term because they have to be, they can't see things for long term. They vote differently. I would argue they vote irresponsibly, and other side effects of that kind of policymaking. It's not good, man. It's just not good.
100%. Yeah. What else could I say? And I just wanted to double back to Sri Lanka. You touched on that. Sri Lanka, at one time, they were a net exporter of rice, and rice is a staple food in their diet. And not too long ago, I think it was just 5 years ago, give or take, they decided to reduce the amount of fertilizer or eliminate the amount of fertilizer they put in the soil. As a result, just a few short years later, they went from a net exporter to a net importer of that same rice. And yeah, that coupled with COVID just wrecking the tourism industry, it crippled their economy, and that here's where they are right now. The same could happen to Canada. I mean, if we're going to just be crippling ourselves in terms of our natural resources, the Canadian dollar, you touched upon it, the competitiveness, that goes hand in hand with our commodities. And if there's less demand for the commodities, the Canadian dollar is going to tank as a result. We've had just in the past 15 years, two instances where the Canadian dollar has surpassed one US dollar. And that was at a time when price of oil was relatively high. And so there's a direct correlation between price of oil and, or at least one can make an argument, the price of oil and the Canadian dollar kind of go hand in hand. So we could be at a point where we may not be able to feed ourselves. we may not have the energy required to ensure that we travel to and from work or to grocery store. And we also have a situation where we might have the Canadian dollar just absolutely wrecked. That's not prosperity. That's third world stuff. This is the wrong way to go. But I'm not sure if you want to add anything more to that.
There's not much else to say, man. That's it's frustrating. It's honestly, like, I find myself these days frustrated more than any other emotion, reading through Twitter, talking to people about this stuff. Like, frustrated is the word that comes to mind, because it feels like, even for guys like you and me who are not having trouble making ends meet, here's a question for you. Okay. Maybe a bit of a deep cut. You don't have to answer this if you don't want to, but like, do you think in 5 years, if things keep going the way they're going, you're going to start to have trouble making ends meet?
If one of us loses our job, yeah, it's going to be a challenge. But as long as things remain the way they are, we're still getting paid, we'll be okay. Even if inflation really ramps up, we'll be fine.
But like, so, if they cut like nitrogen to the point where the food gets to be more scarce or more expensive, and fuel costs keep going up, and the inflation continues to rise, and how many dominoes can fall before, you know, and again, you don't have to answer this, but I think about this sometimes, like, how many dominoes would have to fall before I start to get concerned? It seems like it's less and less likely that everything's going to just work out okay in the next 10 years. You know what I mean? And that's frustrating, because it feels like people are just trying to do the right thing a lot, man. Everywhere in this country, people are just trying to do the right thing. And it seems like we're not being met with good faith policymaking at almost every turn.
It's the people that are fortunate enough to have owned a home for a period of time, those are the ones that are going to be more likely to be sheltered, because worst case scenario, they could liquidate their home and survive off that. And between their earnings and whatever they make from selling their home, they could extend whatever they have for a period of time. So I'm in that position. I bought this home, 15 years ago or so, 14 years, whatever it was. So that's why I consider myself fortunate in that regard. So, yeah. Anyways, let's just keep moving on, and more sad stuff to talk about.
Perfect.
Yeah, this is just the theme of the day. We have record numbers of people using food banks, and the Daily Bread food bank, for instance, in Toronto, saw 171,000 visits in the month of June, and 171,000 is a record high, and that number is expected to go higher and higher, and they had about 8,000 new clients just in that month alone. So the 171,000 in June, that's almost three times higher than it was before pandemic, when they were experiencing about 60,000 per month. And that's a massive jump in just a few short years. Right now, they're buying about previously they were buying $1.5 million of food in a given year, but now they're spending $13 million in a given year for food. So that's gone up tremendously. So this goes to show you that people are relying more and more on food banks in order to make ends meet. And this number is going to go up and up. What does this say to you? This says to me that shit isn't working and they need handouts just to keep their bellies full. That's a sad state of affairs. This is Canada, for God's sakes. How can we do this to these people? But here we are, and this is only going to get worse.
I think it is going to get worse. I'll tell you, doing the work that I do with Wayside, I think the food bank usage is probably at least in part a derivative of mental illness in a community, drug use and mental illness in the community. So I think there's problems there as well. Probably in Toronto, you know, maybe Vancouver surpasses Toronto, but I bet Toronto's got one of the biggest concurrent disorder communities in the country. Also, you know, how long until our Daily Bread food bank is taking more monthly patrons than Heathrow Airport? I think Heathrow is capping at 100,000 per month, right? So our Daily Bread, if they're at 60 now, you know, if everything continues going the way it's going, they're going to get to 100,000 by this time next year, or maybe, you know, year after that, whatever. So it's really incredible to see sort of a off the beaten path comparison between two very different organizations. Heathrow is an international airport.
That's by day. I'm just checking it now. The numbers are by day. So no, it's different. So by month, it's much, much higher.
Okay.
But I see you're getting it. Like, crazy. If you're comparing. Crazy. Yeah.
To give you an idea of how many people that is, it's a lot of people, man, who cannot put food on their table for themselves, for their kids, for their families, whatever.
Yeah.
And you know, the other thing, Len, when you start talking about people who go to food banks, that's like, you know, that's something that makes your heart sink, you know, if you're in our situation. But I think for the people who actually go, those people are less likely to get jobs, to kind of contribute to society. They, you know, they let their chin drop. You know what I mean? And when you do that, you're a different guy. You're a different man, different woman. And you don't reach your potential the same way that you would have if you were able to put food on the table. Your relationships change. Your outlook changes. The way you view your own capabilities changes. I've seen this so many times, man. Over the years, doing some of the stuff I've done in Hamilton, and like, it's just the repercussions of stuff like inflation. It's fun to watch Jim Cramer make every fucking mistake in the book talking about whether it's going up or down. But on the streets, you know, this is what you get. You get real issues, real problems with families, with neighborhoods, communities, schools, kids, parents. Like, real people are paying the price for this stuff. And getting out of these tailspins, even if things turn around, is not easy. Talk to somebody who's been through an addiction center, trying to find their voice again. Talk to someone who's been to a food bank, trying to, you know, pick themselves up off the ground and remember what they're worth as a man or woman. These are very difficult conversations to have that you and me are not equipped to have, for sure. But these are effects that are felt by real people. And the number of people that are feeling them is going up every day. There's no doubt about it.
No doubt. That's it for the Canadian side. And I got a few stories in the rest of the news that I want to bring.
Are you going to lead off with some kind of Coinbase smashing? You haven't done that yet this week. I'm waiting for it.
I have nothing on Coinbase. There's nothing to report on them. So it's good news. We talked about whatever we had to talk about last week on there. By the way, check it out. We were on Green Candle, his show. And with a few other people, we talked about what happened with Coinbase. So if you want to laugh at Coinbase, check it out. It was good stuff. We recorded on Thursday last week, if I recall correctly.
Yeah.
Anyways, Janet Yellen, she's talking about having a way for the U.S. and her allies to somehow get away from the over-reliance on China. And this would be through the creation of a geopolitically aligned trading zone. And should people or countries wish to sign up, she says that if you do sign up, the U.S. will impose harsh consequences for those that abuse or break the international economic order. So it's a new way for doing business. They want to somehow try to get away from the over-reliance on China. Will this work in the end? I don't know. Will this get off the ground? I don't know. I just something interesting that they're trying to do. I think you're just throwing shit on a wall and seeing what sticks. But what the fuck do I know? I'm just a pleb in the basement, just sitting in front of a few pictures and a block clock.
Janet's out there today talking about changing the definition of inflation, or not inflation, of recession, talking about getting away from Chinese dependency. Len, no one, like, America has become this sort of like cocktail of unproductive people and professional activists, it seems like, doesn't it? Like, everyone who wants to make a difference is all about getting someone else to actually make the difference. And they just talk about making the difference and presumably make money somehow off of these other people who will be doing the actual work. It's not sustainable long term. If you want to become less reliant on China, you got to increase manufacturing capabilities and capacities, all that stuff. The other problem though, Len, is that increasing manufacturing means increasing greenhouse gases probably. And that seems to be something that the current administration is completely unwilling to entertain at any level. So good luck, I guess. You got an entire population there. It's completely dependent on Chinese widgets. You and me got Chinese widgets all over the place. I got my phone, my computer, my headphones, you name it, right? All this stuff is at least parted, is at least made in part in Chinese warehouses or worse, which is another thing no one seems to care that much about, right? So good luck, Janet. Janet's got a lot of hard work in front of her, I think. I don't know if she's got the chops to make it all happen, but she'll be busy for sure in the next little while.
Yeah. So when you're talking about all these goods that are manufactured in China, one thing that is not really talked about too is the components that make up these goods. They're sourced from elsewhere in the world. So you have all these components or natural resources or whatever, cobalt, whatever, just to make up some of the parts from other parts of the world. Then they're shipped to China to be processed, to be put into products. And then these products are then shipped to us to be used. It's an absolute disaster. So when people talk about you know, they talk about being green and everything, but as soon as they start holding up a phone in their hands, they're hypocrites because they don't understand where their shit comes from, how it's made, and the fucking dirt that is surrounded this. It's just fucking disastrous. So I don't want to hear this stuff. Like, you can even talk about what's going on in California. They have oil there that they don't want to extract from the ground. They're happy enough just to get oil that comes from other parts of the world, like Ecuador, Venezuela, where the fuck it comes from, and come in through ships, just burning dirty oil, and potentially even having a spill just by shipping it over. But they don't talk about that. They just don't want to see it extracted from the ground. It's somebody else's problems. They'll cut down rainforests to extract that oil. You know what? It's fucking garbage. Like, they don't see the fucking real problems. As long as it's not in there, it's the NIMBYism. If it's not there to see, they don't give a fuck. And
great term. It's a great term. You're absolutely right. It is NIMBYism.
Yeah, it really is. Another thing that we could talk about, which is signaling the end, is that the U.S. Army, they are significantly cutting the number of soldiers that it expects to have in the forces over the next 2 years. And the top general in the U.S. military says they are facing unprecedented challenges in bringing in new recruits. I wonder why. But when you think of a very strong army, United States is usually top of the list, Israel, another one, maybe China. But after hearing this, how much longer could the United States maintain that edge in terms of being considered a strong army if they have trouble just simply recruiting people? Insane stuff.
They can't. I think, you know, not to say that the military is like, you know, akin to athletics, but certainly there's some commonality between believing you can win a championship and believing you can win a war. And part of that equation is believing in the cause that you're playing for, fighting for, all this stuff. I would guess, Len, that there's probably some survey out there that neither you and I have looked at, but probably there's probably a number of surveys out there that say people are less interested in the American values as they're currently constructed than they've been in probably some time. There's never been a bigger political divide between left and right, between red and blue states. You know, this is really probably the most divisive time for the American populace that we've seen. There's at least part of me that thinks that one of the reasons the Russia war is so prominent in American media and at the White House, even as far as little things like the Putin price hike and Putinflation and all that, is because America hasn't had a really solid common enemy in a long time, and common enemies unite, whether that's good politics or ethical politics or not. Not for me to decide, but I look at that military thing and I think, what a shock, you know? Also, in a time where people suddenly are thinking more and more about their mental health and long-term well-being, military is a less and less appealing option. You're going overseas to fight a war against a guy with darker skin than you, who you don't know, and all you know for sure is that you're going to either die trying to get the oil or resources there, or you're going to wind up with some kind of mental shortcoming for the rest of your life, or damage to your body, your mental state, your physical state, you name it. And to me, you know, there was that documentary long time ago. I think it was maybe Michael Moore, where he's talking to some military recruiters in a Michigan mall. And like, they're just recruiting low income kids who don't know any better.
That was
like
Fahrenheit 9/11, I think.
It's the ultimate unethical organization is the military, both in practice and in recruiting and all up and down the chain. As we've seen many times, by the way, it's not like this is something we're just talking about shooting the shit over here. How many different ethical violations has there been in the U.S. military in the last 10 or 15 years? How many times, you know, how's Edward Snowden doing as far as his exposure of the mass surveillance program? It's not like it's a mystery. People don't want to fight for these things anymore. For sure they don't want to. And you can say what you want about, like, you know, people who say, you know, our generation, I'm speaking specifically about millennials here and younger, our generation is sort of the softest, we don't want to engage in difficult conversations or difficult activities. Fuck yourself. I don't want to fucking go fight in a war. That's all. And I don't want anyone else to either. Certainly not for the causes that are being fought for now around the world. Absolutely fucking not. I would never consider picking up a weapon or putting myself in harm's way for any of these people. And I hope that no one else does either.
Another thing that's showing us that we're also closer to the end than the beginning is that Google announced just this past week they're going to be pausing hiring for the next little while. And this is a revelation due to an internal email. Google, this is not some small company. This is one of the biggest, if not the biggest companies in the world. Everything you do, you go online, you are basically tied to Google, and they're starting to stop hiring. They're going to be doing a hiring freeze for the next little while. That is another indication that we are fucked. So yeah, when Google stops hiring people, yeah, the end is near.
I think the hiring freeze is only for 2 weeks.
So, I think so.
So I'm not that worried. I'm a Google shareholder, proud Google shareholder. So I'm not that worried about that. The thing I am worried about with Google, and if I was a Facebook shareholder, I'd be really worried about this because their model is all advertising. People don't spend money on shitty stuff they see on Google or Instagram when they're worried about putting food on the table. They just don't. Like I used to buy stuff on Instagram once in a while. It's never crossed my mind the last little while. Not only because I don't use it that much, but also because I know there's other stuff I'd rather have the money on, right? And so like for Google to pause their hiring, it's not great, but it's also, at least they're not rescinding offers like my other favorite company.
Just wait until they report their earnings.
This week, right?
Yeah.
I think it's either tomorrow or Wednesday. It's this week.
And as Yellow 13 says, it's only for 2 weeks in quotation. So you never know. Like it's like just a temporary tax. We'll just do it for a little while. Once we get it, then we'll be able to rescind on it. Yeah, right. We'll see what happens. But another big thing that happened this past week, we talked about it more in depth in the Greek Candle episode that this past Thursday, check it out. Tesla, they sold off 75% of the Bitcoin that they held on their balance sheet. One thing I want to note is that they sold, from what I understand, in around a $29,000 range. They bought it around 31-ish, sold around 29. I think those are the numbers that I got from this. So there was about a 9% haircut from this whole ordeal. They still hold 25% of what they originally bought. But when this news came out, the price of Bitcoin went down a little bit, but it was very resilient from hearing this news. A year ago, if this was done, I suspect the price of Bitcoin would have tanked much, much more than it did this time around. So to me, it sucks that they sold their Bitcoin, but I'm rather impressed by how resilient the price of Bitcoin remained through this whole announcement. Not sure if you want to add any more color to that.
Well, you know, Len, you and me probably feel the same about Elon. Like, you know, we don't need him. Bitcoin doesn't need Elon Musk, doesn't need Tesla. I think he's a bit of a fraud as an entrepreneur, my personal opinion, of course. You know, not financial advice. I personally don't have any Tesla stock. Maybe you do, maybe you don't, if you're listening or watching. I don't really care that he sold. I think it's interesting that he only sold 75%. Like, why not just sell the whole stack? That last 25%, you know, if you're really worried about China impacting your operations through zero COVID policies, certainly you could use the other 25%. You obviously don't believe in the asset long or medium term. So why keep the 25%? That's the thing I'm wondering. Also wondering about Sergey Brin's wife and him. I haven't heard any updates on that, but interesting story there as well.
Yeah, he's trying to dispel those rumors, and apparently he posted a picture of him and Sergey at a party both yakking it up. So who knows what the fuck's going on. Anyways, the European Central Bank, they surprisingly raised their rates this past week. They were expected to raise it by 25 basis points, but they ended up raising it 50 basis points. So it looks like they're finally starting to figure out how to deal with higher inflation, but it's still an absolute mess. There's going to be a bailout package they're going to be handing out to Italy, because Italy is just an economic mess right now, and it's not going to get any better moving forward. So what's happening in Europe is it's a good thing to examine. It's like a powder keg ready to go off. And this winter, once things start to cool down in terms of the temperature outside and they're unable to heat their homes and businesses, that's when the shit is going to hit the fan. So the next few months, it's going to be okay because it's still relatively warm. But once it gets too cold, especially in those northern countries like Germany, it's going to be a fucking shit show over there. So watch out.
Who are the people who think that Russia's not going to cut off more energy come wintertime in Europe? Where are these people? I would love to hear their side of the story. It seems to me that Russia is telling you in no uncertain terms that come winter, they're going to be cutting that gas off or giving it to other people in their network. It's not going to be Europe who's getting that stuff, even at a reduced flow. They're just not going to get it. It seems to me to be so obvious. And yet, again, no one seems to care over there about any of the energy stuff. They're shutting down nuclear still. I know they just reoriented nuclear and LNG as green, but I think Germany still shut down like four plants or something last month, or proceeded with plans to shut down four plants in the next month or so. So, you know, what's the deal, man? Like the ECB hiking rates into what's already like a depressionary setting over there with all this inflation and energy. I can't wait to see the comments under Christine Lagarde's next video where she's wearing like a $300 pashmina talking about the Eurozone's newest membership. Like it's going to be awesome.
They accepted Croatia recently, did they not?
Woo, cool. They're going to really support. They'll be supporting the euro for sure. That's a booming economy. Like, what a joke, man. What are we talking about here?
It's a disaster. What's happening this winter is going to be brutal. So just keep your eyes open for that because, well, we'll see how it transpires. And the last story I have is about Australia. And they're going to be launching, or they have launched, a review of their central bank after it was criticized for delaying interest rates rising. And even though the inflation took hold, they were very delayed in terms of raising their interest rates. And it prompted, in fact, their own governor to describe this forecasting as embarrassing. And the fact that they're going through a review of this is, I find this to be pretty ironic that they're able to do it over there, but other parts of the world not even being done. I don't know. It's good to see that they realize the error of their way and they're calling themselves out and saying, shit, we fucked up. I wish other central banks would do the same. Does it fix anything? No. But I like to see when somebody say, you know what, we made a mistake. And when you at least acknowledge you made a mistake, you could at least say, okay, we'll try not making it again. Probably will happen again. But it's funny that they're calling what they've done over there is embarrassing. So yeah, cool stuff coming out of Australia.
Let's see what the outcome is. Who's conducting the review? Is it an independent third party or is it some arm of the government?
Good question. That I don't know. I would assume it's going to be something from the government, but it's just an assumption on my part. I could be totally off base, but
I don't know.
Actually, I do have.
I will say that the Australians who are featured on that show Below Deck always seem like a lot of fun. Oh yeah, it's a little out of your age demo. No offense, there, buddy. But the show is like. About these kids who work on a yacht for the summer and they like take on high profile, like rich guests for like 4 or 5 days at a time. It's just like, it's like Jersey Shore, but a little more refined, I think.
It's anything on TV, I don't even.
It's on TV. Yeah.
We don't get that kind of shit over here. And the last thing, actually, I lied. There's one more story, is that this Thursday we have the GDP report coming out from the United States. And this is going to be, we touched upon it earlier. We might have a second consecutive quarter that's showing negative growth, but of course they're going to redefine what it is considered to be a recession. So it'd be some comedic value coming out this Thursday. So anybody that wants to know a little bit more about it, just open up your Twitter, open up your news outlets this coming Thursday, because it's going to be a shit show. It's going to be so fun to watch and see how they spin this shit.
Did you see Corinne Jean-Pierre today talking about not defining recession from the podium? They're going to keep using the National Economic Advisory Boards, like, and but then Yellen and the White House both like putting in print today, yesterday, the definition of recession, you know, technically is this, but an economy that's adding jobs cannot be in recession. Peter Schiff mentioned in a tweet yesterday that just because you added 400,000 jobs, it doesn't necessarily mean you're not in recession, because of the COVID environment, the constant reopening and things of that nature still kind of going on in the tally. And the other thing that he mentioned I thought was pretty prescient was, if people are getting second jobs, Len, you know, gig economy type jobs, that counts as a new job too. It doesn't necessarily mean the economy is not in recession. It means people are struggling to keep up, I think, more than anything. So let's see. I as always, I wait with bated breath the Peter Ducey versus Corinne Jean-Pierre tete-a-tete in the press room. I think that'll be good. And I'm also looking forward to hear what Chuck Todd and the other stenographers for the state over on CNBC and CNN and all those other places, NPR, CBS. Let's hear how they spin it, man. I'm going to be dizzy, I think, from all the spin. But I'll be there watching and listening all the same, man. I'm sick. It's like a train crash.
As will I. And that's it, Joey. That's it for all the news stories for today. I do have a no coiner, but no Bitcoiner of the week, similar to last week. What about you?
I got nothing. Go nuts. People come here for this section anyway to hear you. I will say that this Bitcoiner and NoCoiner rant sponsored by our friends at Tahini's. No matter what the price is, Len, it's always a bull market at Tahini's.
Yeah. So check them out. They open up.
Can we get that on a shirt? Ali, can we get that on a shirt? Figure it out, man. I'll send you the CBP logo. We can do a collab.
I think they open up a soft opening in Brantford.
Nice.
Am I right? Anyway, or Bradford. I wonder somewhere like
they
that.
Got,
I can't
they
remember.
Got like they got 14 to 15 stores, Southern Ontario. And I've been to one of them, the one in Hamilton, a couple of times. It's never disappointing. It's always good food, man. And the people who work there are great too.
Brantford. So they had a soft opening on July 25th. So that today, in fact, sorry, it's still ongoing from 11 a.m. to 10 p.m. Check it out. So yeah, there's still time to get a bowl or a shawarma over there. But anyways, my NoCoiner of the week is a gentleman by the name of Matt Lundy. And Mr. Lundy, he wrote an article for the Globe and Mail this past week. And it was titled, Blame America, Why Canada's Steep Inflation Isn't Entirely Our Fault. And he just goes on to rhyme the reason why the fact that rising prices here in Canada isn't entirely our issue. It's really because we're so tied to the United States. We're tied at the hip with trade, and the United States is dropping the ball, that we're just, you know, collateral damage in this all. But we have to look in the mirror. When you fuck up, you got to say we fucked up. Just like the governor, or was it the Bank of Governor, or from what is it, Australia, whatever the fuck he is, the Bank of Australia dude, he was saying that we fucked up in terms of raising rates. We did it too late. Same thing is happening here. We're increasing interest rates in Canada at a much, much, it's very, very late. By the time we've done it, it's just a knee-jerk reaction. You're playing catch-up, and you're doing 100 basis points at a time. That doesn't show that they're doing the good job. That shows that they don't understand what they're doing. In fact, Tiff Macklem, last week we talked about it, is that he came to a realization, he announced to everybody that he wasn't able to project what was going to be happening moving forward, and that they, if they knew it all along what happened, they would have raised rates much, much earlier. But again, who would have fucking known that prices would rise so fast when you release so much new liquidity in the economy and keep rates so low? Like, it doesn't take a fucking genius to figure this out. I figured it out. Fucking Joey figured this out, but Tiff Macklem couldn't have figured it out. But anyways, to go back to Mr. Lundy, fuck, to stop defending these people because they fucked up. Look in the mirror. You've made a mistake. Just say, look, we fucked up. We made a mistake. We'll try to fix it moving forward. Don't blame it on the United States. Blame it on the policies that are done here, because they're the ones that are impacting Canada. Yes, some of what's happening in the United States does impact us. But really, we have control over our own destiny. If we make poor decisions, it's going to impact our own lives. We're the ones that are fucking up. Let's fucking look in the mirror and say we're the ones that are doing it. Stop blaming the United States. Blame ourselves. We're the ones that fucked up here. Not us per se, but somebody else that's doing shit for us. They're the ones that are really screwed things up. But yeah, Matt Lundy, my NoCoiner of the week.
It's frustrating, isn't it, that when things are going well, it's Canadian policy that's the cause, and when things are not going that well, it's American policy that's the cause. Who is the low IQ, you know, person that this messaging is for?
It's a Globe and Mail article.
I'm unknown. Yeah, I mean, anyone who pays for a fucking newspaper is an idiot. So that, you know, should be enough of a qualifier. Sorry if you're paying for newspapers, anyone in the audience, but like, just stop. Just stop. Like, there's nothing good in there. It's all fucking garbage. Just ignore it. You get better information from NIMS on Twitter about everything.
Like, it's most good kindling.
But Len, no one can afford a house with a chimney anyway. So what are you doing with the, you know what I mean? Like, having bonfires maybe?
Yeah, you can dig a hole in a backyard.
I cannot believe this. Like, that with all the good information that's available on Twitter for free, economic data, political news, all this stuff. Like, why would you pay the Globe and Mail to tell you that all the good things that are happening in Canada are Canada's doing, and all the bad things that are happening in Canada are America's doing? Who wants that messaging? It's like getting patted on the head as a young kid, right? Like when you do something to earn a popsicle. Like, who do you need that still as an adult? You're a functioning adult. You drive at high speeds on the highway next to me. Your vote counts as much as mine. It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable that people still pay for that kind of garbage.
and they watch it on TV and also soak it in too. People are paying to watch CNN or CNBC or whatever the fuck they're watching on, and they're watching it because there's proof of that. They could show that they have viewership. Although it's declining, there's still a number of people that do watch it, and they believe the shit that's being reported on there, which is too bad. CBC.
We're gonna get, I know who I do like in Canadian media is Evan Solomon. If we ever get to the point where we can have him on the show, we should do it. He'd probably have a lot to say about, I don't know, stuff that we can't mention right now. But I would like to have him on the show at some point down the road.
Are we going to be talking about private sale of art?
Or? I actually need some stuff for the wall here. So if he knows a guy. Also,
I'm sure he does.
I should say before we wrap up on the audio, because I know a lot of people listen to the audio and we don't get quite as much on the YouTube. Thank you very much for all the suggestions for art for the wall. I have to look through them. I just want to note that a lot of you guys sent me stuff that's like $1,000 for a portrait or like a painting. I'm not paying $1,000 to hang something on the wall.
How about 1,000 shots?
No, most of this shit is like stuff that my wife and I already owned. I got a couple hats here from the sponsors, and Tomer was nice enough to give me a Why Bitcoin book. That's about all I'm going to be doing. Alexander saying the same thing. Yeah, I do have a white paper in my Etsy cart right now. Me and Len got to talk about how we're going to expense that. Yeah, otherwise, I thank you for the suggestions. A lot of good shit, man. And if you're looking for art and have a budget a little broader than mine, in that thread, there's like 20 or 30 options. Some of the stuff is nuts how good it is. A lot of talent, man, out there in the Bitcoin artwork space. So definitely recommend looking into it if you're looking for something like that.
So to answer archiving's question, no, because we don't want to get kicked off. And
when have we ever fucking talked about that?
We can't. We'll get kicked off so fast. And this is one hat that I am missing on my wall, and you're missing it on yours too, Joey. This Hive hat is fucking golden, man. Just I like it. So yeah.
Yeah, Frank and team, thank you for sending those over. They look sick. My wife even said sick logo. That's high praise coming from her.
And that's it, Joey. That's it for the show. We'll be going to the after show momentarily. But yeah, let's talk about the price of Bitcoin. I have it ready in Canadian dollars, so I'm finally prepared.
Let me snipe. It is 21,100. My prediction looking better by the day. I know there's a couple of people in a certain group chat that have been giving me shit for a couple of weeks, but I am ready to be vindicated, my friend.
I've been quiet on that topic because I think that things are going to be going down, and I'm waiting for the time to scoop up even more cheap sats. But anyways, Canadian dollars, 27,133. Not looking good.
RIP. Bitcoin's dead. This is the end of the program. We're going to the after show. Thanks for listening on audio. Definitely head over to YouTube. We're going to talk about some stuff we wouldn't normally talk about. Maybe my weekend, maybe Len's weekend. And we'll see you Wednesday with HODL D of CoinKite, 7 o'clock.
Yeah, so take care, everyone.